This is the weekly Parsha Shiur with Rabbi Chaim Bravender of Atid and WebYeshiva.org, recorded live in Jerusalem at Beit Knesset HaRamban. Visit www.webyeshiva.org for live interactive online Shiurim today.
We're in the Parsha of Bishalach. The Parsha of Bishalach is the Parsha of Yitziat Mitzrayim. It's the parasha of the escape. But a few things happen along the way, one of which we want to look at a little bit more carefully tonight. The pasuk says, you see Shemot Perek Yudalet, Paro hikriv, vayisu b'nei Yisrael et einehem. You remember that contrary to anything you could imagine, Paro decided to get his soldiers together and to chase after B'nai Yisrael, which means that Sach HaKol, right in the matter of Yitziat Mitzrayim, Paro was not impressed. Paro didn't change. He wanted the Jews as slaves in Mitzrayim. So even though they were leaving Mitzrayim, Paro decided to chase after them, which considering the impact of the Aseret HaMakot was a pretty brave decision on his part, so to speak. So the pasuk says, "Uparo hikriv." Paro came close to B'nai Yisrael, chasing after them. Vayisu B'nai Yisrael et einehem, and the Jews lifted up their eyes. Right, you see, Paro came close, and they lifted up their eyes. And lo and behold, the Egyptians are chasing after the Jews. Now the Jews, this was not part of the deal. When they left Mitzrayim, they thought that they, with God's help, had vanquished the Egyptians. And here it seems that they had not only not vanquished them, but the Egyptians were ready for a fight and they were chasing after them. They were afraid. I mean, what were they afraid of? They were afraid that at this point, somehow God either had abandoned them, or God was not able to deal with the problem. Nevertheless, they screamed out to Hashem. They davened. I think we would call it davening. They screamed and yelled their davening. Even today there are people who scream and yell when they daven. But there's a community of yellers in Am Yisrael called Karliner Hasidim. If you've never heard it, you should. It's an experience. I mean, I'm not talking about Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur, but every day, Mincha and Maariv, they're in there screaming away. I mean, you think they get bored, but they don't. They think that that's how you should approach God, because there are many references to prayer in the Tanakh that say, as this pasuk says, "Vayitzaku b'nei Yisrael al Hashem," that the tzaakah, the screaming, was not something particularistic, but the screaming is the way you daven when you really daven. So what they do is, they don't know if they're really davening, but they're going to scream anyway, and they do scream. They scream. It's an interesting thing. Okay, so we'll look at, let's look at Rashi. Paro hikriv. See Rashi? Right under the psukim. Hayala lechtov paro karat. It's like a Hebrew. It's not paro hikriv, which is like hifil. And hifil means paro caused somebody to come close. There's no cause. Hayala lechtov paro karat. Mahu hikriv. Hikriv atzmo. It's a statement by Paro that Paro was an idealist. Paro tried to get ahead of Bnei Yisrael. And then, Noseya Achrehem, B'lei V'chad K'ishachad, Rashi is saying nice things. Right, B'lei V'chad K'ishachad, that's Bnei Yisrael standing to receive the Torah. And here we're talking about Taro and Mitzrayim. Noseya Achrehem, so Rashi is relating to the fact that Noseya is singular. It's as though they were all together. Davar Acher, B'nei Mitzrayim Noseya Achrehem, Ra'u Sar Shal Mitzrayim Noseya Min HaShamayim Lazor LeMitzrayim. What could that possibly mean? That there was still a battle going on in heaven about Yitziat Mitzrayim. And in heaven there was a Sar of Mitzrayim that was trying, you know, an officer, just like there was a Sar of Esav. And that there was a battle between the Tsar of Yaakov and the Tsar of Esav. There's this idea that there are sometimes there are battles that take place on earth, but at the same time, they're also taking place in heaven. And this battle was of great significance, the battle between Mitzrayim and Yisrael, but Rashi doesn't explain what the battle was about. But we can imagine. We can imagine. Now you see what it says? Vayitzaku b'nei Yisrael el Hashem. They screamed, Tafsu umanut avotam. Vayitzaku b'nei Yisrael, Rashi says, Tafsu umanut avotam. They followed the lead of their ancestors. Avraham omer, Elam HaKodesh Shomad Shav, Yitzchak omer, Vasuch Vasadeh, B'Yakov, Vayitzga b'makom. So what is Rashi? I mean, what is Rashi saying? What is Rashi saying? That this was a genetically Jewish matter. Like, this is what Jews do. They daven. How do they know they daven? They learned it from Avraham, from Yitzchak, or from Yaakov. So it wasn't because, I don't know what Rashi means, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. Okay. You'll think about that. Rashi's explaining to us what's happening from the Am Yisrael side. The second pasuk says, "Vayomru al Moshe midliyin kvarim b'Mitzrayim." Is it that there are not any graves in Mitzrayim? Lakachtanu lamut b'Midbar, that you brought us out here to die in the desert? Mazal tasit alanu lotziyanu b'Mitzrayim. What an attack! What an attack against Moshe Rabbeinu on the day that they left Mitzrayim, after the ten plagues. To me, it's inconceivable. Can you imagine this discussion? Here's Moshe Rabbeinu leading the Jews, here are the Jews, here are the Egyptians, right? The Jews are saying, boy, this is like we came in the wrong way. Where's that, you know, that map that tells us where to go? We're in the wrong place. Rashi says, "Hamibli en kvarim v'chi machmat chesron kvarim she'en kvarim Mitzrayim likavesham v'chnastanu misham." I mean, it's what do you call this? Sarcasm? Sarcasm. I mean, it's hard to know, you know, these things in the Torah because there are no super segmental directions. You know, when you see a play, when somebody writes a play, so parentheses they have to write. Loud, soft, laugh, sarcastically. Otherwise you wouldn't know. You wouldn't know how to read the play. But here also we don't know exactly how to read the pasuk. But Rashi seems to say that it's sarcastic. I mean, you brought us out here because there's nowhere to get buried in the tribe. It's like a waste of time. Pasuk you'd bet. Didn't we go through this already? Bnei Yisrael say to Moshe Rabbeinu, "Chadal mimenu, v'navdat Mitzrayim. Let us alone. Let us just be slaves in Mitzrayim. Ki tov lanu avodat Mitzrayim, mimuteinu b'midbar. We're happier to serve the Egyptians as slaves than to die in the desert." So you see, Yitziat Mitzrayim has taken place, and there's a total this distinction between Moshe Rabbeinu and Bnei Yisrael. They haven't learned a thing. The Egyptians haven't learned a thing, and the Jews haven't learned a thing. The Egyptians are certain that the power that enables Moshe Rabbeinu to do all these tricks will come to an end. There'll be a point where Moshe Rabbeinu won't be able to do it anymore. And Bnei Yisrael says, look, you want to take us out of this shrine. We want it to be neat and clean. And here at the end of the Parsha Shmot, the king of Egypt says, I'll double the work, I'll triple the work. You'll have to go and get straw to build to make the bricks. So Bnei Yisrael say to Moshe Rabbeinu, this we didn't agree to. We didn't agree that things should be worse. We only agreed that things should be better. But that is to say that their view of things is the short view. It's like right now. It's going to happen right now. It's not going to happen at all. That Pasuk Yud Gimel is Moshe Rabbeinu's response. Vayomer Moshe la'am al tira'u hityatzvu ra'u et yeshuat Hashem asher ya'aseh lachem hayom ki asher e'item et Mitzrayim hayom lo tosifu l'rotam od ad olam. That is, Moshe Rabbeinu validates their demand. They want it to be over. They don't want to have anything to do with Mitzrayim. They want, you know, you see it, Mitzrayim, to be a clean break. And so Moshe Rabbeinu says, that's exactly what's going to be. It's going to be a clean break. You won't see them again. It's all going to come to an end.
Look.
What?
Exactly, same words as the
Kapara. But now he's saying it, El Ha'am. Al Tira'u, do not fear. Hetiatzvu, stand up tall. Ure'u at Yeshuat Hashem, you see the salvation from God. Asher yaseh lechem hayom, ki Hashem re'item et Mitzrayim hayom, lo tusif l'rotem od ad olam. And this day, this is what Rashi says. Look at Rashi. Where is Rashi? Hashem, no. Yud Gimel. Asher yitem et Mitzrayim, masher yitem otam. Eino ela hayom. It's true you see the Egyptians coming after you, but today is the last day that you're going to see this sight. Hayom ushita otam loto sifu od. It's not going to happen, not going to happen again. So you see that there's like a delay in the understanding of the day Israel of what's happening, but Moshe Rabbeinu validates the fact that Yitzhiat Mitzrayim is taking place right now, and that Yitzhiat Mitzrayim means the end of any relationship with Mitzrayim. Pasuk Yudalit. Hashem Yilachem Lachem Vatem tacharishum. Rashi says, Hashem yilachem lachem is bishvilchem, ki Hashem nolcham lachem. Okay. What is vatem tacharishum? What is vatem tacharishum? You won't be screaming, because you'll be confident. You'll see it's happening. Whatever's supposed to happen is going to happen. Okay. What? At Sivui. Not according to Rashi, I don't think so. But if you ask in general, Hashem Yilachem Lachem Batem Bishvilchem, Rashi doesn't even explain Batem Tacharishun. I don't think it's at Sivui. I think it's, you will respond to the new situation. The old situation is that you're in danger. The Egyptians are coming. The new situation will be that the Egyptians are gone. So in the old situation, you screamed because you felt that the world was not, you know, you weren't confident. In the new situation, you won't, so you'll be tacharishun.
Is there a connection between tacharishun and vayitzaku?
Is it what?
Is there a connection?
Yeah, I think so. I think before, vayitzaku. But now when you see what's going on, that the Yitzhiyat Mitzrayim is really taking place, Vatem Tacharishun, I don't think it's a tzivui. I think it's, that's what will be. Just like Moshe Rabbeinu didn't ask them to scream, so Moshe Rabbeinu is not directing them to keep quiet, but they're going to keep quiet because that's the only reasonable thing to do.
This is dreaming is desirable behavior?
Well, if it comes from fear that you shouldn't have, so it's not desirable. I don't know. You want to know if this is a legitimate tefillah? I think it's not. I think that's what Moshe Rabbeinu is saying to them. He said, why are they davening? Why are they davening? Because they feel that God will not fulfill the promise to take them out of Mitzrayim and get them away to eat. That's why they're davening. Of davening. Yeah. Sounds like that's positive. Okay. Good. In other words, I agree with you that there's a lack of clarity here about whether they're doing a good thing or a bad thing. And if they're doing a good thing, how good is it? And if they're doing a bad thing, how bad is it? But there certainly are different elements. One element was that they feared that what they had been promised by Moshe Rabbeinu would not take place. And the other element was that they davened, which sounds like a good thing to do. That's what you say, what Svi says. Could be. So there's a kind of a lack of clarity here. What is it that we're talking about? What was the state of Bnei Yisrael? What was the response of Bnei Yisrael? What is Vatem Tacharishun? Right, the last pasuk is this, and maybe this will clarify. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe. Famous pasuk. Everybody knows this pasuk, but nobody mentions it. Ma titzak elai. So Moshe Rabbeinu's titzak was also based on Avram Yisroel and Yaakov. It was also tefillah. And yet Hashem turns to Moshe Rabbeinu and says, Ma titzak elai, which is like saying, Al titzak elai. This is no time for davening. Dabel b'nei Yisrael b'Yisrael. There's a time for davening, and there's a time for doing. And you're making a mistake by davening. I mean, we didn't hear exactly that Moshe Rabbeinu davened himself, but it could be that Moshe Rabbeinu represents Am Yisrael in this matter. Maybe. Let's see what Rashi says. Matitzake la. You see the Rashi? At the bottom. Lamadnu shaya Moshe omeid umitpalel. Rashi says, the correct inference is that Moshe Rabbeinu was also standing and davening. He doesn't say that he was, but if God says to him, Matitzak Eli, so the stomach, that means that he was davening. That's what Rashi says. He was davening. Lamadnu shayam Moshe omeidu mitpalel. Lamalo HaKadosh Baruch Hu lo eit ata laharich b'tfilah. This is not the time for you, Moshe Rabbeinu, to be davening. Especially to daven a long Shmona Esrei, She Yisrael Netunim Bitzara. The Jews are in trouble. Right? In other words, you're Moshe Rabbeinu, you're not in charge of davening. You're in charge of leading Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. So you could say, what do you mean he's not in charge? For Moshe Rabbeinu, davening is a luxury. You know, like some people can go with the shul in the morning and daven for a very long time. And other people have someplace to go. So they can't daven for such a long period of time. So what God says to Moshe Rabbeinu, according to Rashi, is that you, Moshe Rabbeinu, you have something to do. You can't just daven. I mean, I know you like to daven. But that's not the issue here. That's what Rashi says. Listen again. Lamadnu shayam Moshe omeidu mitpalel. Amalu HaKadosh Baruch Hu lo eit ata la'arich mitfilah she Yisrael netunim b'tzara. What's the tzara of Bnei Yisrael? That they think that the Egyptians are going to do them in somehow. So what is the job of leadership? To move them in the direction of Yam Suf, where everything good is going to happen. Davar acher, Rashi proposes another explanation. Matitzak a lie. A lie adabar talui v'lo alecha. What are you davening for? I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, will decide. Not you. ולא עליך, כמו שנאמר להלן על בני ועל פה ידי תצווייני. That you can't turn to God and tell God what to do. There are certain things that are in God's hands. So what does Matitzakalai? He says, Moshe Rabbeinu, what's he davening? He's davening to tell God what to do, and you shouldn't do that. You should tell God your feelings about things, I guess. It's like it's not in the Rashi.
He's also sarcastic.
Who's he? Think so? I never thought that sarcasm was a godly... Okay. I mean, it wasn't what I was thinking of, but okay. Daber b'nei Yisrael v'yisa'u ein lahem ela lisa shein hayam omeid b'fneihem. All they have to do is go. I mean, davening's not going to do anything, but if they go in the direction of Yam Suf, the Yam will split. Kedai zechut avoteihem v'heim v'emuna she'eminu bi v'yetz'u likro lahem ayam. So you see what Rashi says? He says this is the same things that tefillah based on. Zchutam, zchut avotam, and she'eminu. Right? But you could misuse it. You could misuse the feeling that you have. In this case, Rashi says they have to take those qualities, the zchuyot that they have from their avot, and they have to move in the direction of Yam Suf. So sometimes, so this is what Rashi, it's in Rashi very clearly, that there seems to be a kind of a negation by heaven of the tefillah option at a moment when there's clearly something else to do that would save you. In other words, sometimes davening is a great thing, but sometimes it reflects a defeatism, which is not good. If you know what you're supposed to do, then you should do it. And in this case, B'nai Yisrael knew exactly what they should do, and therefore they should have said, "We are B'nai Yisrael. We are the children of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and there's no doubt that we will be able to carry out the mission." So this is like a tension people have in themselves. I don't want to point to World War II or to any other particular time in history, but you could say that this was a dilemma. This was the dilemma. Do you move or do you daven? Right? And davening at that time meant that you didn't move. Good, bad, understandable, not understandable, who are we to make a decision? All those things go into it somehow. Okay. Now, let's look at the Ramban. Because the Ramban is also going to be responding to the way Rashi read the Chumash. Right? Sometimes the Ramban says, I don't like Rashi. I do like Rashi. But even when he doesn't mention Rashi, he's always got it in mind. He's always thinking about Rashi, saying, in spite of Rashi, I'm going to write a different commentary. You have to understand that the Ramban says so in his introduction, not the long introduction to the Torah, but the poetic introduction to his commentary, which is printed in every Ramban that I know of, in the Mikraot Gedolot or in the separate text of the Ramban. There is a poem that precedes the commentary in which he explains what he's going to do. So he explains, one of the things he says is, look, it's all based on Rashi. You start out with Rashi, and then you say what you said. So here, even though Rashi has explained everything to us, the Ramban has something to say. So let's see what the Ramban says. I'll try to go through it. It's a little bit... Einenu nireki b'nei adam atzorakim ala Hashem ha'oshiyam yivatu b'yeshua sarashat salahem v'yomru ki tov lahem shelo etzilam. He says, I don't get it exactly. If you have people who are clearly under the aegis of God, after all, there were 10 makot, and some of the makot, there were miracles within miracles. That means the makah only affected the Egyptians, but didn't affect the Jews. He says, can you imagine that people who are being saved would say, Ki tov lahem shelo hitatzilam, that they would be happier not being saved? They said, you brought us here to bury us here. What about there aren't enough graves in Mitzrayim? I mean, the Ramban doesn't understand it. It seems crazy to him. Aval hanachon shenefaresh ki ayu kitot. This is the Ramban's theory. This is the Ramban's theory. In other words, he had to create a new story in order to understand these psukim in the Torah. I mean, you know, those of you who studied literature know that this is something that is not uncommon amongst commentaries. When you see something that you absolutely can't figure out, so you make up a background story which makes that passage understandable. So here the Ramban says, I can't believe that the Jewish people would stand up to Moshe Rabbeinu and say, we don't want to leave Mitzrayim. We don't want to get buried in the desert. We would rather be buried after hard work in Mitzrayim. After all, they were all aware of Yeshuat Hashem, that God was saving them. How could they say a thing like that, Ramban? So his answer is, Ayu Kitot. You have to understand, amongst the Jews, there were parties. I mean, groups, today they like to use that word as a cult is a sect. What? A cult. I didn't want to say that word. Yeah, but he means factions, like political factions. That's what he means. He doesn't mean cults. But he says there were people like that. Vakatuv yisaper kol masha asu kulav. And the pasuk, the psukim, will refer to B'nai Yisrael, but they're only talking about a particular group, a subgroup in B'nai Yisrael. Amar ki akat ha'achat zo'eket el Hashem, v'achat mekhashet b'nevi'o. One group is screaming to God to help them, and the other group is taking a stand against the prophet, that's Moshe Rabbeinu. Veina modeb Yeshua anaseit lahem, veyomru dechitov lahem shelo itzilam. And that group that is screaming at Moshe Rabbeinu, they say, "Oh, we'd be better off if God didn't save us, if God didn't take us out of Mitzrayim." Al zot katuv veyomru al yam b'yam suf. So in any event, he goes through a whole series of proofs to prove this idea that B'nai Yisrael is not just one group. When you say, it doesn't mean every single person in Am Yisrael was davening to God to take them back to Mitzrayim. But it means that this is the reality that Moshe Rabbeinu had to deal with. And therefore, when Moshe Rabbeinu finally made a decision, he said, let's go forward to Yam Suf. There were enough people in B'nai Yisrael who were willing to follow Moshe Rabbeinu that the few people who were opposed to this were not able to carry the day. So if you turn the page, if you turn the page here, the Ramban on Pasuk Tetzvot, you see in the middle of the paragraph there, Matitzake Lai, Omar Rabbi Avron, that's the Ibn Ezra, Ki Moshe Kenegid Kol Yisrael Shayutzo Akimlo. The Ibn Ezra says not to tzak elai, it's addressed to Moshe Rabbeinu, but really it's about all the Jews who were screaming and davening to God that they should go back to Mitzrayim. That's the Ibn Ezra. The Ramban himself said, who was screaming? A small group of people. A party, a subdivision. So why did God say to Moshe Rabbeinu, Matitz Akelai, singular, when we're talking about Am Yisrael? And as far as Am Yisrael is concerned, according to the Ramban, right, he said, Ra'ui lehem litzok. They have every right to daven. They were afraid, so why shouldn't they daven? Ve'ulai yomar, matinichem litzok, daber lehem v'yisa'u. It's as though God said to Moshe Rabbeinu, look, I know that you think that they're doing a good thing by davening, but you shouldn't let them. Get them going. Daber lehem v'yisa'u. Ki kvar amarti lecha v'kavda b'paro. I've already told you that Paro is going to be in trouble here. Rabotenu amru shayem Moshe tzo'ek u'mitpalel. Against the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra says, Matitzak Elai refers to all of Am Yisrael. Chachamim said, Matitzak Elai refers to Moshe Rabbeinu. Ki lo yada ma yaseh. Va'afo pi sha'amalo Hashem yikavda b'paro. Hu lo haya yodea ech yitnaheg. Even though God told Moshe Rabbeinu that Paro is going to have a lot of difficulty, he didn't know how things were supposed to work out. He's standing on the edge of the sea, and Paro is coming after them. And so Moshe Rabbeinu was davening to ask God what he should do. He knew that he had to do something, but he didn't know what he had to do. He said, Tom, how to talk a lie? Shayita tzarich lishol mata aseh ve'ein lecha tzorich litzof. Matitzak elai. It should have been that Moshe Rabbeinu asked God what to do. That's not a prayer. That's a directive. There was a direction. How it should go. Ki kvar hodat kicho v'kavda b'paro lo sibra katuv zakat Moshe ki hu b'chlav Yisrael. So the Jewish people, according to the Ramban, the Jewish people were screaming because they were really unhappy. And Moshe Rabbeinu joined in the screaming. So God said to Moshe Rabbeinu, according to the Ramban, Matitzak Elai, why are you screaming? You know that it's going to work out. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, well, I don't know what I'm supposed to do right now. Okay, but you don't have to scream. You could just ask me politely, what should you do? Where should you go? Etc. So we see that all of this business is troublesome. Right? It's hard to know. If you learned in the Mefarshim, Rashi and the Ramban, a little bit we saw quoted the Ibn Ezra, it's hard to know, to like reflect on what the emotional state of Am Yisrael was, why they were in such a state, and why the whole thing didn't affect them. Yitziat Mitzrayim didn't change them into perfect people. So there are two sources that I would like to look at with you that try to explain them. One is in a book called the Nefesh HaChaim, which was written by Rav Chaim Volozhiner. Rav Chaim Volozhiner was the founding Rosh Yeshiva of Volozhin. In Volozhin, Volozhin, name of a town. Right, if you ever take one of these trips to Lita, which is like a wonderful thing to do, you can spend a lot of time on a bus, which is something you probably would never do in America or in Israel. Right, so you go to Lithuania, and you sit on a bus, and you get to Volozhin, and you see that it's a bakery. The yeshiva building still exists, and it's today it's a bakery, so it's That certainly would get you enthusiastic about something. And also, it's not kosher. So it's like a double bad. It's writing? Maybe. I don't know. I don't remember. I just remember it was muddy. You had to walk around. They still have no streets in Volozhin. Anyway, you have Chaim Volozhiner called that because he was the first Rosh Yeshiva in the yeshiva called Volozhin, in the town of Volozhin, was, let's say, the outstanding student of the Vilna Gaon. And the Vilna Gaon encouraged him to start this yeshiva. And this yeshiva was different than most yeshivot because it included room and board.
Paid for by?
What?
Paid for by?
They raised the money. Paid by the Jewish people. The reason I'm pointing this out is because for the first time it became possible to educate the students 24 hours a day. Whereas if you lived at home or if you learned in the town where you were brought up, so of course you would be also educated by your parents and by whoever else was in the town. But Volozhin was the first yeshiva that had a dormitory and served food. What? Chachmei Lublin was the Hasidic version of Volozhin, but Chachmei Lublin started much later. Chachmei Lublin was a yeshiva of Hasidic kids, and Volozhin was the yeshiva of non-Hasidic kids. Now it could be that there were a few Hasidic kids who went to Volozhin, but it was not a common thing. At the time, as you know, there was this conflict between people who called themselves Hasidim and people who called themselves Misnagdim. And as you also know, the greatest Misnagid of them all, I mean, maybe I'm exaggerating, was the Vilna Gaon. What? Not me, no. The Vilna Gaon was very strongly against Hasidut for whatever reason. It remains a little bit of a mystery about why he was so firmly committed to the anti-Hasidic ideology, which itself led in part to the growth of Hasidut. You know, like if the Vilna Gaon doesn't like them, it must be really interesting. So I think that that's what happened. So his Talmid, the Vilna Gaon lived at the beginning of the 18th century, and his Talmid, Rav Chaim Volozhiner, they say, you know, there's always these kind of stories. Rav Chaim Volozhiner had an older brother who was also a Talmid of the Vilna Gaon, who died young, and he was considered to be the greatest student of the Vilna Gaon, but of course he died young, so he was not really in the running. Rav Chaim Volozhiner went to Volozhin, which is a town not too far away from Vilna, and he started this yeshiva. He started this yeshiva, which became a world-famous yeshiva. But you have to remember, in its heyday, according to Charles Stamper, in its heyday, had 400 students. The Mir yeshiva in Yerushalayim has 6,000 students, and we have no way of knowing that the heyday has come. You know, it just keeps rolling along. But 400 students doesn't seem like such a big deal, and that was in its prime, in its best years. Rav Chaim Volozhiner, who found himself in the midst of this discussion between Hasidim and Mitnagdim, wrote a book, a classic work. It's classic because no one learns it. It's one of those remarkable books called Nefesh Chaim, which means literally, the Rav Chaim is bearing his soul. about matters of grave importance. And that book, Nefesh HaChayim, discusses, although in an elliptical manner, the difference between Hasidim, the ideology of the Hasidim, and the ideology of those who are not Hasidim, who are involved with the Torah. And it's a big book and contains a lot of information. The reason that nobody learns it is the following. Hasidim don't learn it because it's anti-Hasidut. The Misnagdim don't learn it. Misnagdim are people who don't dress like Hasidim. Everybody who doesn't dress like a Chassid is a Misnagdim. So Misnagdim don't learn the Nefesh HaChayim because Rav Chaim quotes the Zohar on every single page. Which, first of all, makes a difficulty. I mean, the Zohar is generally written in Aramaic, but the new editions of Nefesh HaChayim translate the Zohar into Hebrew, the Zohar parts into Hebrew. But still, it's a little odd. Where the Zohar is a book that the Hasidim like more than the Misnagdim. And here you have the Nefesh HaChayim seems to be an advertisement for the Zohar, so it's a problem. Nevertheless, in spite of all of this, I want to tell you what the Nefesh HaChayim says about us, about our problem. Nefesh HaChayim says this. You see the second paragraph on the second page. Oh. Listen. V'lechem da'et kriyat yam suf. Amar hu yitbarach le'moshe matitzak elai de'ber b'nei Yisrael v'Yisrael. Right? God said to Moshe Rabbeinu, matitzak elai. This is Nefesh HaChayim Shar Aleph, the first section, large subdivision, the ninth chapter. But Selomah, bedid hu talia milta. Bedid hu? Him. Who's him? Moshe Rabbeinu. Talia milta. Everything depends on Moshe Rabbeinu. How so? She'im hema yiyu betokef ha'emunah. He means all of B'nai Yisrael. That it all depends on Moshe Rabbeinu and B'nai Yisrael. Right, and that's what it says in the Pasuk. Remember the Pasuk? What happened after Kriyat Yam Suf? Vayaminu v'Hashem over Moshe Avdo. That's what the Nefesh HaChayim is talking about. She'im heima yu betokef ha'emunah v'abitachon. If B'nai Yisrael are filled with faith and trust, v'yis'u halokh v'azaso el hayam samuch lahem lo yira. He says, if they have faith and they have bitachon, then they'll be able to go el hayam without fear. Me'otzem bitchonam shevadai yikara lifnehem. So what is it that the Nefesh HaChayim is explaining to us? That even though B'nai Yisrael knew in their heads that what was supposed to happen was Kriyat Yam Suf, that the Yam Suf would split and they'd walk in dry land, in fact, when they saw this yam, they saw the sea, they were not perfect, in perfect faith that this would happen. And so they started davening. They were davening because they were concerned. And so the Nefesh HaChayim says, "Az yigremu al yedezet orirut lemala." He says, the way it really works in this world is God promises that the sea will split. But that doesn't mean that the sea will split. What's the condition for the sea splitting? You, B'nai Yisrael, you have to want the sea to split. You have to believe the sea will split. Only then will the sea split. Because according to the Nefesh HaChayim, a divine promise is not about God proving something. God can split the sea, a big deal. God can do anything. So splitting the sea is of no consequence. The promise of splitting the sea was given to B'nai Yisrael only because they had to make it into an article of faith. They had to believe that the sea would split. And if they believed that the sea would split, then it would split. That was the deal. That's what faith is about. Faith is not about letting God do it. Faith is about making sure that you desire God to do it enough that God will do it. And that's what he says. Shiaselam anesi karalif nehem vizel. He quotes a pasuk in Shir Hashirim lesusati berichbi paro demisich rayati. There's a pasuk about how there's a somehow comparison of Bnei Yisrael to a sus, roselomar to a horse. Kemo besusi richbi richbe paro shehefech min hagoshel olam. The minhag shel olam, the way it usually is, that the rochev niglat sus, that the rider on the horse directs the horse. Ube paro v'chelo hasusin higed rochvo k'mosher amrazal kach dimiticha v'imshilticha rayati al zeha ofin mamash sha'at sha'ni rochev aravot. God says, even though I got and rochev aravot. Aravot are clouds in the heavens. My God is above all the heavens. And kol zekev yochol et manhig oti ayidei ma'asecha. Nevertheless, who's in charge of the way the world goes? Man. Bnei Yisrael. They're in charge because the world, heavenly world, is susceptible to faith. That's what it's susceptible to. She'inyan et chabrut kiv'yachol le'ha'olamot u'rak kefi inyan et orut ma'asecha la'an notim. That means that we have control. Ultimately, we have some kind of control. And therefore, when God says that something will happen, it will happen if we want it to happen. And therefore, Matitzak Eli, the Pasuk says, the Tzaakha of Bnei Yisrael indicates that they, Bnei Yisrael, were not confident, that they didn't have faith, that they were not expressing some sort of level of faith when they stood and davened before God. So you see that davening has different aspects to it. And sometimes davening can paralyze you. It's counter-indicated. Not faith. Not bitachon. Not emunam bitachon. That's not counter-indicated. But or the other, either you believe God will do what God has promised, or you say, gee, I don't really know if God will do what God has promised, and therefore I plead with God that something good should happen. So this was the issue according to the Nefesh HaChaim. Ma titzak elai? You're davening the wrong kind of davening. You're davening, you Bnei Yisrael, are davening the kind of davening where you have doubt about what might happen, where you're not certain that God will support you. Whereas the kind of davening that you should be davening is the davening that's based on faith and trust. Faith in God and trust in the promise. In fact, as an aside, I would say that this idea that we, Am Yisrael, have to have faith in the promise is the most critical part of the faith learning process of Yitziat Mitzrayim. Because Yitziat Mitzrayim, people had to come to the conclusion, were asked to come to the conclusion, that no matter how bad it looked from day to day, that the end was clear. That they knew what would happen. That the promise to Avram Avinu would be, in fact, done and taken care of. That's what the Nefesh HaChaim says. Who?
Did God promise them in advance that he
would... Avram Avinu.
The Red Sea?
No, not the Red Sea, but you see at Mitzrayim. Oh, because Daba Paro. It says because Daba Paro b'chol chaylo that Paro will not be successful. It says b'feirush. Maybe it didn't say Yam Suf, but it says that Paro would not be successful. The last source who tries to explain this to Shem Yishmuel. The Shem Yishmuel is Bornstein. His name is Bornstein. Shmuel Bornstein, who was the Sochet Shaber Rebbe. His father was the first Rebbe in Sochotchot, and his father was a Talmud of the Kotzker, outstanding Talmud of the Kotzker Rebbe, and he married the Kotzker's daughter. Shmuel, his son, was the Rebbe after him, and the father was extremely brilliant in all areas of Torah learning. But the son had one advantage on the father, apparently, and that was that he wrote very well and clearly. And so that eventually the son wrote all of the things that his father had written originally or had spoken originally. And the things about the Torah, the Parashat Shavua, are called Shem Mishmuel. Much of it comes from the Socha Chava, the father. And in the Shem Mishmuel, he quotes his father a lot. He says, "As I heard this from my father, as my father said, etc." But apparently even the things that he writes in his own name, himself, are strongly influenced by the father. So that's Sochachev. His name was Bornstein. He lived 100 years later. 100 years later than the Nefesh HaChaim. Okay? So this is what he says. The Shem Shmuel. He puts in that word tmimut. Tmimut means tamim tiyem Hashem Elokecha, means don't try to manipulate God. Don't try to manipulate God. That's called avodah zarah. Avodah zarah means you say, "Okay, God, I need like something good to happen to me here. Here's lunch," or something like that. That's called manipulation. Tmimut means that you don't try to manipulate God. Whatever God presents you with, that's what's supposed to happen. The third line, the sixth word, okay. He says, if the Jews were as they should be, if they had this tmimut, if they had this faith in God, and they saw the Egyptians coming, running after them, and Paro was in the lead, and there was in heaven, they saw the Sar Shel Mitzrayim. They would have looked at it and laughed. He said, "Look at this. They think they could beat us when God is on our side." Achar shekvar ra'u b'neichem makat b'chorot ששבו כרגע פגריהם מביתים והיה להם לפתוח בקודש ברוך הוא שבידי כן יהיה שוודאי יהיה כאן שיהיה like God promised גם כאן שיפלו פגרים מביתים בצד אחרון שהשיגן או באופן אחר ועל כן כשראה משה שהם ביירה בפחד בבני המצרים פגמו במידת התמימות מה גם כשאמרו המבלי הם כברים ממצרים שניתנו סעור בעיסה כמו שכתב המחילתו נתיירי מאוד פן חס ושלום נתקלקל כל העניין שהרי אינם ראויים לגמר גאולה אתה מצד הדין והנה הם נתונים בדין כמו שכתב המחילתו שהם נתונים ביד בדין אם להינצל כי אתה נוהג במידת הדין, כמו שהיה הכוונה שתהיה גמר גאולה מצד הדין, והם קלקלו כל העניין. You get it? In other words, when they came to the end, the whole process is almost finished. So who should Bnei Yisrael have been? Who should they have been? They should have been the people who believed in God so strongly that even the frightening reality would have no effect on them. They believed so strongly that God would take them out of Mitzrayim. Okay, so what difference does it make? There are Egyptians, they're screaming, they're yelling. It doesn't matter because we have this opportunity to leave with God. B'chas v'shalom. I'm now 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines from the bottom. Im yitnaheg b'midat adin, kmo shehayta kavana, adavar am omeid b'matzav lo tov. Midat adin. Midat HaDin means perfect. There are no leniencies, no leeways. Everybody's doing what they're supposed to be doing. So if there was Midat HaDin, if the Jews were on that level where they understood that everything was from God and everything God promised would in fact happen, that's the way it should have been. But somehow they gave in. They weren't like that. They weren't like that. And therefore Moshe Rabbeinu and Bnei Yisrael were not clear about this. It's true it says that Paro it'll be difficult for Paro, but we weren't sure any longer whether we deserved that. Whether we deserve that kind of positioning by God. And skipping a line, it palel tfilat tsa'aka lorer alehem rachamim rabim shenitzlu akopone mitzad bidat achesed rachamim im lo efshar hadin. And so the Shem Mishpul says that what Moshe Rabbeinu did was he started screaming, and all the Jews started screaming, because screaming is the kind of prayer that evokes midat harachamim. And they knew that they would not be able to achieve Yitziat Mitzrayim b'din, meaning because they thought the right things and believed the right things and understood the right things, they wouldn't be able to do that. And so they appealed for rachamim. How did they appeal for rachamim? With tzaka. Tzaka means, I know that we're not beseder. I know that we're not as we should be, but I have no choice. I don't have that internal strength to be able to live. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Ma tzaka elai daber b'nei Yisrael v'yisau, okay. According to Shem Shmuel, the midat harachamim is going to take the Jews out of Mitzrayim. And that is the beginning of the story. You put all this together, it's the beginning of the story. What do we see in the Midbar? We see Kitot. We see sects. There's Korach, Va'adato, against all of Am Yisrael. We see people who could not make it the Midat HaDin, because after all, if you make the golden calf, what should happen is that everybody should be killed. Disappear. What do you need Am Yisrael for? But that somehow God says to Moshe Rabbeinu, the Yud Gimel Midos of Rachum, Hashem, Hashem, Kel Rachum V'Chanun, that the continuation of Jewish history is not going to be dependent on Din, which means the letter of the law, which is the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted Yitziat Mitzrayim to be, because that would have created a new element. A new element, not for Am Yisrael, but a new element in the world. Something that the world had never seen. And so, Ma titzak elai, the Ben Yisrael v'Yitzau, is a response, according to Shem Shmur, is a response to the prayer of Moshe Rabbeinu, which was, take us out of Egypt, berachamim. We're not able to go along with this idea that it all depends on Din. We're not able to go along with the idea that it depends on Din, but we have to beg God for Yitziat Mitzrayim of Rachamim. That's the point of the Shem Yishpur. So according to the Nefesh HaChaim, people had to understand that their responsibility was far-reaching in Yitziat Mitzrayim. They weren't just there to, you know, God would open the gates and they would walk out and go to Har Sinai. But they had to believe that God would do that. They had to trust that God would do that. And that belief and that trust would ensure that Bnei Yisrael would leave Mitzrayim. According to Shem Shmuel, there's a different issue. And according to Shem Shmuel, they somehow had already given up the exalted idea of Yitziat Mitzrayim Paras Din, judgment, which means that everything is done perfectly. God does what God does, and Bnei Yisrael do what Bnei Yisrael do. But Bnei Yisrael lost the ability to see themselves as appropriate for divine justice, and therefore they begged for Yetziat Mitzrayim of Rachamim. And this happened again and again in the history of the Jewish people until they came to Eretz Yisrael. It happened with the golden calf, right, the Egel HaZahav. It happened again several times in the Midbar. Have a good Shabbos.